Okay, as I, when I get to the methods part of my presentation, I'd just like all of you to know that the methods section applies both to my paper and to the one that David will be presenting right after me. Despite the very long title of the presentation, what I'm basically looking at in this, in my particular part of this, is a sample of HIV-positive men, and in this case, they're all gay or bisexual men, and to whom do they attribute responsibility for HIV-related safety? Do they think that it is properly attributed to other men who are also HIV-positive? Do they think that it is the responsibility of their HIV-negative partners and things like that? I have no disclosures that need to be made here, and I would like to acknowledge with profound gratitude the support of the National Institute on Drug Abuse for supporting the research, and the 332 men who gave very generously of their time and answered some of the most personal, detailed questions I've ever thrown at people in any study I've ever done. By way of some background, let me start with this. In order to curtail the spread of HIV among men who have sex with men, both HIV-positive and HIV-negative men alike must take responsibility for their sexual health. If you look in the published literature, we know that HIV prevention, education, and intervention messages need to be different for HIV-positive and HIV-negative men, because quite often, POS and NEG men are different from one another, both in terms of their risk-taking and in the risk views that they have. HIV-positive men need to be approached with information that is specific to their personal situations and sensitive to their needs. This is an issue of cultural appropriateness. But at the same time, that includes some of the same messages that have to be presented to men who are HIV-negative. So for example, both groups, POS and NEG men alike, need to receive information about HIV and how it is or is not transmitted. Both groups need to have information that can help them bolster their communication skills with potential sex partners. Both types of men need to learn more about how to broach the subject of HIV testing and HIV serostatus with prospective sex partners. But when you're talking about HIV-positive men, there are also things that are unique to them that they specifically need to have addressed. For example, things like serosorting, or the effort to try to have sex with people who are also HIV-positive so that you can curtail the spread of HIV. HIV-positive men have to have some additional understanding of the ongoing risks that are associated with practicing unsafe sex. Just because they already have HIV doesn't mean that there aren't some benefits to be gained by practicing safer sex behaviors. And also understanding some of the legal risks that come about by having sex with unprotected sex with men who may be negative or who don't know their HIV serostatus. Understanding how HIV-positive men feel about risk-taking and how they view their responsibility for HIV risk are some of the key factors involved in understanding the risk practices in which they themselves actually engage. So in my part of the presentation today, we're drawing from a sample of HIV-positive men taken from a larger study of POS and NEG guys, and I'm focusing my attention in this on attitudes towards HIV responsibility. The research is part of a broader study that looked at men who have sex with men and actively sought unsafe sex online. There are three research questions that I'm focusing on in my presentation. First of all, to what extent do HIV-positive men believe that it is the responsibility of another HIV-positive man or the responsibility of a man who is HIV-negative to keep their sex safe? Secondly, how, if at all, do notions of this responsibility relate to men's actual involvement in HIV risk practices? And then third, what factors are associated with, think of it in terms of what factors underlie, the belief that it is an HIV-positive man's responsibility to keep his partner safe from HIV, or an HIV-negative man's responsibility to keep himself safe from HIV? The data come from what we colloquially refer to as the Bareback Project. It was a National Institute on Drug Abuse funded study conducted from January of 2008 through the middle of 2009. We used a national random sampling approach that was based on a combination of the day of recruitment, the race as stated in each man's profile, and the first letter or number of his actual username or profile name online. In all, we used 16 different websites to do recruitment for the study. All of these websites were either specifically and exclusively targeting men who looked for unsafe sex, or there were websites that made it possible as a researcher to identify quickly which men were and which men were not looking for unsafe sex. Men were approached occasionally by instant message. We found out relatively early on that that wasn't the best way to recruit people, and switched over to an all-email notification process. At all times during recruitment, every one of the people who was involved in approaching men had their instant messaging on at least two different servers on. So for example, if I was recruiting on bareback.com, I would have my AOL instant messenger open, I would have my Yahoo instant messenger open, and sometimes I might also have my MSN messenger open, so that anybody who actually received the message while I happened to still be online could actually shoot me a message and we could talk if they wanted to interact that way. Interviews were done by telephone for the study. They lasted an average of about an hour and 15 minutes. The shortest was 30 minutes, and the longest was a beastly 3.5 hour interview. And I had the joy of doing that one. Men were offered payment in the amount of $35 that was either done by PayPal or a check that was mailed to them. About 1 man in 8 actually declined payment for the study, and that enabled us to interview additional men. We took some of the money that wasn't used to pay the first 300 and interviewed an additional 32 men for the study. My particular paper focuses on 196 of those men who said that they were HIV positive at the time of interview. Theoretically, this study is based on a syndemics theory approach, and in accordance with anything that involves syndemics theory, you always end up with lots of variables and lots of different types of risk domains and behavioral domains that are looked at. So you see before you a long list of things, ranging from general health practices to extremely detailed data about sexual behaviors, extensive information about drug use and drug-related preferences, HIV knowledge, a wide array of psychological and psychosocial functioning measures, attitudes towards condom use self-efficacy, childhood maltreatment experiences, among other things. The main items of interest in the paper that I'll be presenting in a moment come from two specific questions that come from the locus of control or the locus of HIV responsibility scale that we used in the study. Both items use a Likert strongly disagree through strongly agree response set, 5 points. The first of the items read, HIV positive men have a special obligation to have safe sex with men who are negative or do not know their HIV status. The other item is, it should be the responsibility of someone who is HIV negative, not someone who is HIV positive, to make sure their sex is safe. The sample for the study actually ends up being a fairly good representation of men in the adult population overall. There's a good age distribution. For the study as a whole, it was 18 to 72. Since this particular paper focuses on men who are HIV positive, it's a slightly more restricted age range from 24 to 67. About 3/4 of the men were Caucasian, with good representation of Latino and African American men. Educationally speaking, this is a fairly well-educated sample, with slightly more than half of the men having college or postgraduate education. The large majority self-identified as gay. For my presentation, all of the others self-identified as bisexual. So looking first at the first of those two measures, that HIV-positive men have a special obligation to have safe sex with men who are negative or do not know their HIV status, you can see from the two bars on the right that about 2/3 of the men, 2/3 of these HIV-positive men, felt that, yes, indeed, HIV-positive men have a special obligation to keep their partner safe. If we switch the wording and focus on the other question, though, that it is an HIV-negative man's responsibility to keep himself safe, you get a much more mixed impression from the data. The two columns on the left, people who disagree with that, suggest that almost half of the men in the study disagree with the statement, while about 1/3 actually agree with it. There are other measures not reported here that look at shared responsibility and different wording for those other two measures, and they, again, provide a very different portrait. We chose for this presentation the two that we thought illustrate the central tendency of the men best. So going to the second of the research questions, is there a relationship between these attitudes towards responsibility and involvement in other HIV risk behaviors. What you find here is, for the most part, with this particular measure, and again, this is the measure, as you can see in the dark blue, that HIV-positive men have a special obligation, that more often than not, it is related to their involvement in other risk behaviors, and usually it is involved in a way that is inverse. So, for example, if you look at the third line, where you have the p is less than 0.04, what it's showing is that the more men believed that they have that HIV-positive men have a special responsibility to keep their partners safe, the less they had sex involving internal ejaculation. When we switch to the measure of it is an HIV-negative man's responsibility to keep himself safe, that belief is not related to any of the risk behavior measures we looked at. So for the remainder of the presentation, when I talk about the risk, I'll be looking at the former measure. In the next part of the analysis, we looked at the multivariate factors using our syndemic theory approach. What factors are related to having a belief that it is an HIV-positive man's responsibility to keep his partners safe from HIV, that he has a special duty to do so? In all, we find 5 factors that together explain about 20% of the overall variance. The first of these is age. The older a man was, the more likely he was to feel that there is a special responsibility to keep partners safe. HIV information burnout. The more a man felt burned out by receiving too much information about HIV, the less likely he was to feel that POS men have a special obligation to keep their partners safe. Greater partner communication was associated with a lower likelihood of saying that there is a special duty. The more people somebody knew who were HIV positive, in this case actually who were living with full-blown AIDS, the more likely they were to believe that HIV positive men have a special obligation to keep their partners safe. And methamphetamine users were less likely to believe that POS men have a special obligation to keep their partners safe. So in terms of what it all adds up to, well, first of all, HIV-positive men generally do believe that they have a special responsibility to keep their partners safe from HIV. From an intervention perspective, that's good news, because it means that people who hold the greatest potential to spread HIV are generally of the mindset that they have a duty to keep their negative partners safe. But clearly, not all HIV-positive men share that belief. More than 1 POS man in 6 disagreed with that notion. And in addition to that, more than 1 in 3 felt that it was an HIV-negative man's responsibility to keep himself safe, regardless of what he himself, as a POS man, might want to do with that partner sexually. HIV interventionists targeting HIV-positive gay and bisexual men really need to work with these men to foster the notion that HIV safety is a shared responsibility, and then, on that basis, offer specific strategies regarding how to bring out behaviors that are consistent with that notion. Beliefs about HIV responsibility are related, but inconsistently, to involvement in risky behaviors. Whenever the relationships were observed, whenever they were significant, they were always in the same direction. More attribution of safety responsibility to POS men was associated with less involvement in risk. Again, that's good news from a public health perspective. However, there is a concern here, and that concern is that HIV responsibility beliefs were related unrelated to a lot of men's actual behaviors. Overall, what it suggests to us is just how complicated the relationship is between beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors. It highlights how challenging it is and is going to be for interventionists targeting HIV-positive MSM to accomplish risk reduction goals via attitude and belief change alone. We found in the multivariate analysis 5 factors that were related uniquely and significantly to the extent to which HIV-positive men believed they had a special obligation to keep their partners safe, and each of these deserves a real quick mention. First of all, the older men were, the more likely they were to believe that it was a positive man having a special duty to keep others safe. That difference was especially noteworthy if you look at men aged 50 and older compared to men under the age of 40. The wider you go on the differentiation there, the bigger the gap gets. What it suggests is that we have risk differences and risk attribution differences based on age, and that more work needs to be done to understand how younger, middle-aged, and older adult men look at and think about HIV, risk-taking, and safety-related issues. HIV burnout. The more men felt burned out by information about HIV and AIDS, the less likely they were to say that HIV-positive men had a special obligation to keep their partners safe. Basically, when positive men are sick and tired of hearing about HIV, they are more likely to attribute safety issues to their negative partners. Interventionists who are working with men suffering from HIV burnout need to find ways to diminish their HIV information fatigue. And that is something we've known for a long time in the AIDS epidemic, that HIV information burnout is a risk, and we need to constantly find new ways to challenge it. The more people somebody knew who were living with AIDS, the more likely that person was to attribute HIV safety to men who were HIV positive. Our presumption is that that is the direct result of having witnessed the effects of AIDS on friends and partners and family members. As with the previous presentation, we find that methamphetamine use is related here as well. The exact nature of this seems very complicated. We know from other parts of the data in this project that the meth users are heavily risk involved, and as a result of that, they're a group in great need of treatment. How it plays in this case, with risk attribution is something we need to learn more about. And finally, greater partner communication skills were associated with a diminished belief that HIV-positive men have a special obligation to keep their partners safe from HIV. Something seems to have gotten lost here. And what seems to have gotten lost is the notion that HIV partner communication is a two-way street. Positive men need to be able to communicate openly with their negative partners. Negative men need to be able to communicate openly with their positive partners so that mutually they can come to agreements about safety-related matters and risk.